You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday, Tuesday, casual Tuesday, Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
It is Friday, February 10th, 2017. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. It's Casual Friday, folks. I'm wearing my soft collared shirt and my Zumbas. Also, it's the day that we welcome Cliff Schechter to the program to review the, well, generally, back in the day, it used to be the week. Now it's the last 12 hours. Also on the program, with a suggestion on how we can escape for just even 90 to 180 minutes, Matthew Film Guy, with a film recommendation. And probably some eBay tchotchke recommendations as well.
Also, probably not that escapist, knowing him.
That son of a bitch.
Lars von Trier last year.
Exactly.
Well, that actually, it's arguably a better vision of life. Republican town halls explode with indivisible protesters. Ninth Circuit hands Trump a big loss. Michael Flynn lied about his Russian contacts. What?
Dad.
Polls for Republicans. I should say polls say for Republicans, Bowling Green massacre justifies it all.
It's a big one.
Mm-hmm. Dems in Congress seek a DOJ Russian records. And Trump doesn't know what start is, but he knows it's bad. More chipping away at Dodd-Frank. Meanwhile, Donald Trump caves to China. Tom Price was confirmed last night at 2 a.m. in the morning on party lines. All the Democrats voted against Tom Price, short of one, Claire McCaskill, who was visiting her husband who just had surgery.
Corporate shill. Total
classic.
Hack. Maybe if they weren't seeing their husbands, they would organize and win.
The heartwarming tale of how to send a Valentine's Day if you are a Republican, a young Republican in college, young in love. Actually, let's talk about that. All that and more on today's program. We'll also feature a Jimmy Reefercake song. Reminder, just on the Jimmy Reefercake song, recreational marijuana now legal in Maine. So understand that's the case there. Oh, that's awesome. Are you able to do that? Is that working? Oh, my God. This wow. That's pretty cool. Isn't it? I don't know. It is for me. Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, Valentine's Day is coming up. And I want to make it clear, these guys are not a sponsor. The Central Michigan University College Republicans hosted a Valentine's Day party. And they were handing out Valentine's Day cards. And here it is. My love for you burns like 6,000 Jews. With a little picture of Hitler. It's sweet. You know, I'll tell you what's sweet about it. Is that they clearly, that somebody took the time to cut out the picture of Hitler. There, you know, there was some thought that went into this. The 6,000 Jews, obviously an understatement. I think all college Republicans know that it's 8,000 Jews who died in the Holocaust. However, please understand, they did apologize for the cards. In a Facebook post, the college Republicans apologized. Card placed into the bag without other members' knowledge. I don't know who the other is. I mean, in other words, if I was to say everybody in this office, we found a card, and I would say the others weren't aware of it. Right? So somebody obviously, this is their way their apology basically went down, like only one or two of us thought this was appropriate.
And I think I look forward to seeing them on Reuben.
At tonight's college Republican meeting, we had a Valentine's Day party in which each member decorated a bag and other members placed Valentine's inside of other bags. Unfortunately, a very inappropriate card was placed into a bag without the other members' knowledge. Bag was then given away to students sitting in Anspach Hall, once again without members' knowledge of its contents. College Republicans, as an organization, did not distribute this Valentine. It was just our members, in other words. We in no way condone this type of rhetoric or anti-Semitism. We apologize for any offense and want students to know that we don't tolerate this sort of behavior.
Wait, what was that?
And
it's kind of funny.
To be fair, too, the university president, George Ross, said, while the student's offensive language is protected by the First Amendment, it's true, Valentine's Day card is unacceptable and not consistent with our values and standards. Now, I don't know if Central Michigan University College, that must be a state college, I think, in which case the First Amendment issues would become far more into play. Obviously, the private institution, First Amendment is not in play. People understand that, right? That it's the government. The government has to impinge upon your rights to speech for the First Amendment to be in play. But he also had this to say, we caution against concluding that the action is representative of the entire student organization or its members. So, folks, rest assured, the entire Central Michigan University College Republicans don't believe that their love burns for you or for anyone else, burns more than 6,000 Jews in the gas chambers. So,
I would tweak it a little bit. It's kind of funny, but it needs a little more subtlety.
In an interview with the student paper, CMU's College Republican President Mackenzie Flynn.
Yeah!
Denied knowledge of the card and pointed out the bags were intended for members only.
Oh, well, right.
While still not appropriate, I want to clear it up that they did not create it themselves. Look, this was supposed to be an inside joke.
Supposed to be an internal Holocaust joke.
We don't have Jews here. So obviously it wouldn't be offensive to anybody else here if it just had been kept on the inside. And remember that name, Mackenzie Flynn. Very good chance this person's going to be a high-ranking official in the Department of Justice if this administration is still in office within 3 or 4 years, right? This is somebody has just tacked this story up on their bulletin board in Washington, D.C.
Steve says that Mackenzie Flynn is a real comer.
He's good.
And then he said that there needs to be a cleansing. Like, I don't know, Ivanka is juicing. I guess maybe that's what he means. I don't know.
Look, we like to have, it's like Lincoln, right? We have Jared Kushner, and then we fill the rest of the place with people who want to burn the juice. So
it's called a team
of rivals.
Of rivals.
Folks, as you may or may not have known, I think I forgot to tweet it out. I've been better about tweeting out when I'm doing my weekly hit on MSNBC, which, and I usually do one a week. which is perfect for me because then I don't have to shave more than once. And I do appreciate the people who tweet out to Harry's. Like some people, when I go on MSNBC, they just call it my Harry's night. Because that means I've had to shave. And then usually, I mean, unless there's some type of special event, I shave once a week. Maybe I shave twice a week just so that it's, you know, not too out of control that one time I'm going to. But
we need to sassy Trump you talking about shaving sometime.
Oh, that would
only once a week. Yeah.
Oh, you know what? If we have him
on, I don't really like it.
We got to get Sarah when it's on and see if he'll do like a guest.
That would be great sassy. If he could win for all of us. It would be amazing.
Look, you know this. For decades, one big razor company, we're not going to say which, but
I think we all know who we're talking
about. We know who we're talking about. One of the worst eras of the Patriots was owned by Victor Kiam, and that was the whole Susan Olsen thing. Let's not talk about that. Has relentlessly increased prices and reaped immense profits at the expense of their customers. So Jeff and Andy, two ordinary guys, fed up with getting ripped off, started Harry's to fix shaving. Harry's knew there was only one way to ensure quality, so they bought their own factory. They sell directly to you over the internet. So just $2 a blade compared to four or more you'll pay at the drugstore. Harry's razors include everything you need for a close, comfortable shave. Weighted ergonomic handle. The handle's so much nicer. So much more stylish than those other, like, I don't know. Five precision engineer blades with a lubricating strip and a trimmer blade head. Rich lathering shave gel and a travel blade cover. Harry's is so confident in the quality of their blades, they want you to try their shave set for free. What? You heard that right. Just cover the shipping when you sign up. Plus, as a special offer for fans of the show, you go to harrys.com right now. Enter the code MAJORITYREPORT. MAJORITYREPORT, one word, at checkout to get a post-shave balm.
Get a balm. Yeah.
That's harrys.com, code majority report.
Ooh. This sounds
wonderful. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We have been doing Gorka
all morning.
And we do have audio of him on a PRI show. And it was great.
Next thing you know, we won't be able to have real characters in video games anymore, which is exactly what Hezbollah wants.
Why won't you let those college students celebrate Valentine's Day?
So, snowflake SJW warrior can't take a little Holocaust joke.
Oh, the snowflakes are going to melt inside the ovens, are they?
New special at Prager University, who is a Jew... Explaining the power of free speech, but I suppose you don't care about the free exchange of ideas.
Dave Rubin is like your, it's like your Jimmy Dore.
He's the worst.
All right, we got to take a break. I mean, we just like to sitting here taking pot shots at other guys. All right, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, Cliff Schechter.
You started.
We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Folks, it's Casual Friday. I've got a little bit of a cold, but yet there's a slight hint of optimism in my voice, isn't there? Well, that's because I get to play this song.
Cliff Shacktown, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Shacktown, Libertas LLC.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC. Hello, Cliff. How are you doing? Is it week three now? Yes, right? Week three.
It's not week like 33. It feels kind of like that.
It certainly feels like that. But here we are. We're at the, we're well into it now.
Yeah. Yeah, we're buried in it, I would say. It's nonstop. You know, it's like you're like on the losing end of a boxing match, just constantly getting pummeled.
Yeah.
Because every time you look up and realize one ridiculous thing they've done, within the hour, there's another one.
Yeah, I think I was saying, I don't even know if I mentioned this on air, but Hayes tweeted last night, last 36 hours have been insane. And he tweeted that at, 10 o'clock, and after that, the story about Michael Flynn came out, which we should talk about. They confirmed Price after that. There was the story about Nadler came out and the Gorsuch reversal.
We literally may only have time to talk about what came out after 10 o'clock last night.
Yeah, I mean,
that's essentially how crazy everything is.
It's insane. It's insane. And right now, and just to right now, in the Eastern District of Virginia, there's another court hearing on one aspect of the ban, of the immigration ban. Apparently,
how many courts have to reject this thing before there's, I mean...
They're trying to find some type of... I'm not sure what the government strategy is going to be, and we can talk about that in a bit. I want to get to that. You know, there's a lot of other places people can hear about that, and I will definitely talk about it, but I want to talk about some of these other ones. But let me just quickly say that apparently the judge asked the Department of Justice attorney, because the argument that the government is making is that none of this stuff is reviewable. The president has sole authority in this area, and none of it's reviewable. And from a procedural standpoint, that's largely correct, but it's when you start bumping up against constitutional issues and other statutory issues that you start to have a problem. So the judge in this Eastern District asked if President Trump could ban all redheads from the country. And apparently
the DOJ attorney didn't have an answer to
did
that.
Did not have an answer to that. And
so apparently he was thinking about it. So, you know, maybe you can, maybe you can.
And I guess according to Marcy Wheeler, that particular judge handles a lot of national security cases. So this could be a bad way to start off. And so much of this, and the irony about a lot of this is that from what I've read, so much of this is a function of the White House incompetence. And this is where we're going to start to see them, you know, fail at a lot of things. At one point, they'll probably get it, but who knows?
At the most basic things they do, I mean, obviously issuing an executive order like that, you would expect an enormous level of attention to be paid to that, to putting it in front of the various legal parts of the administration who need to look it over, policy, you know.
I showed it to my entertainment lawyer. What's the problem?
Yeah, exactly.
He negotiated my contract with Apprentice.
That's right, and that's pretty much what we're... So there's that. But even, like, the small things, like, they can't seem to put out a press release without spelling errors in it. You know, and grammatical errors. I mean, these are simple things that if you put any effort into it, you can eliminate. And they can't seem to pull that together. That's sort of the level of incompetence that's there.
And it's also hard to know, like, you know, I don't know enough about who the DOJ attorney who's arguing this case is, but I presume this is an attorney who's been there for a while, but maybe just the normal requisite drafting has the normal requisite care in terms of drafting hasn't been taken. I mean, it's hard to know, you know, just sort of in this process, are there people gumming it up a little bit, or is it just there's a tremendous amount of incompetence that nobody needs to add to the gumming up? I mean, there's a lot of that, I think, that's going on.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some things that are just not terribly defensible, frankly. I mean,
no, well, a lot of it's not. And again, I'm not even talking about policy at this point. Just the sort of level of incompetence, the lack of review of things they say and things they do. And again, you know, none of this is surprising. What you see during a campaign from somebody is most often what you get as a president. And it's not like we just have seen Trump during the campaign. We've seen him for many years. Why would anything change? He's sort of right. A big mouth with not much to back it up. You know, he kind of has always just, you know, skated along on family wealth, and he hasn't had to do very much because every screw up could be solved with a bankruptcy law or a bailout from the family or whatever. And, you know, nothing ever has sort of been, or, you know, you screw up with cheating on this wife, you get a new one. I mean, that's kind of the way Trump's always gone along. So why would the presidency suddenly make him any different? And anybody who believes, like, at least these ridiculous pieces, I mean, so I think it's some of it was conservatives hoping and praying, but writing these pieces that, you know, the office would make him more serious. No, it wouldn't. There's nothing that's going to make him more serious. It's not possible.
You know what? At age 70, I realize now's the time for me to buckle down.
That's right. I mean, he shook Prime Minister Abe's hand and said, "Strong hands," in front of the cameras. I mean... Exactly. Well, you can tell it right away. Trump's a little—he probably was looking at Abe's hands being bigger than his. And
we'll get to
Japanese guy has bigger hands than me. Cancel
everything.
That's
gotta hurt. Huh?
All right. Well, we're gonna get to. I mean, and folks, there's always when we're talking about this administration, there's always going to be sort of two different planes in which we talk about sort of operations and. And operations, of course, encompasses all the corruption stories, all the possible Manchurian candidate style stories, all the incompetence stories, and then the policy stories. Hopefully we're going to get to the policy stuff, because the policy stuff is really just we're just seeing the personnel right now. We're not quite at the policies yet, smaller things. But so let's go to let's talk about what's happening with Michael Flynn, who this guy is one of those, like, you know, you can't quite tell how he's going to impact policy, but in terms of like being one of our operation stories,
he's literally one of the worst. And again, there's a competition there, right? I mean, you're up against DeVos and you know, you're up against people who have absolutely no experience of what they're doing, Haley and Tillerson and, you know, and then Price, who I'm sure we'll get to, who just, you know, likes to put his money into stocks and then pass laws to make those stocks go up.
I mean, who are we kidding? I'd like to do that, too.
Well, it's a smart investment strategy, if you think about it. But I mean, you know, Flynn was fired from DNI, and, you know, Colin Powell, when those emails came out, had basically called him a moron, among other things. A whole bunch of other officials. I mean, it's been known that this guy was sort of the black sheep who was kicked out and pushed away from intelligence for having a lot, you know, for all the things that we say about Donald Trump, which is why they were a perfect marriage. Lack of temperament, lack of competence. And then he has this weird crush on Russia, which, you know, for a national security guy is even more strange. He went to a thing in 2015, I think it was, that RT invited him to, the Russian propaganda arm. And, you know, he wouldn't, it's not even that he went to it. He wouldn't tell anybody what he was paid to be there. He just won't disclose facts about what his relationship is. So we knew that he had a conversation with the Russian ambassador, which was inappropriate in general, previous to the inauguration of Donald Trump and the administration coming in. Already, that was incredibly inappropriate and something that I'm not sure anybody has ever done before. But He lied, we now know, because the Washington Post talked to 9 different intelligence officials from various agencies and found that all of them agreed and said that when he claimed he had not discussed the sanctions that President Obama imposed on them in December based upon their messing with our election, that he, you know, he claimed he had not had those discussions, and he sent out Mike Pence, who defended him and said, no, he told me he didn't. Well, turns out he did. And I'm not sure what's worse about the whole thing. Again, it leads you to question everything about this guy. Is it the borderline treasonous behavior of having a conversation with somebody that literally just hacked into your election, that whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, if you actually, you know, give a damn about this country, you should probably care about, and did all sorts of things to undermine democracy in this country? Is it the fact that he was reassuring these guys and saying, oh, don't worry, there'll be no repercussions for that? Is that the worst part? Is the worst part that he lied about it, and he sent out the vice president to lie about it, and we don't know what Mike Pence knows. So now the question has Mike Pence been pulled into this whole thing? Because was he lying to us? Or is the worst part that this guy was the head of the DNI and somehow thought he could have a conversation with a Russian ambassador that we would not be monitoring? That he's such a dumbass, and I don't know what other phrase to use, because I've never worked in intelligence, and I know this. You know, that he'd be able to get away with having this conversation, denying it, and that nothing, the transcripts would never come out because, oh, yes, we're going to let a Russian ambassador have a conversation with Michael Flynn, and we're not going to, there's definitely no way that we're going to listen in on that. So there's so many levels here. I mean, pick your poison with this guy. Treason, stupidity. I mean, I don't know where you want to put it, but it's, you know, we spent 900 something days on Benghazi. Spent more time on Benghazi than we did on Pearl Harbor and 9/11. I mean, it's a no brainer would be an insult to no brainers that this guy should be fired immediately and should be investigated under the Logan Act, which I know has never been actually applied. But again, no future national security director has ever gotten on the phone before with an enemy, which they are, that's undermined an election of ours, which they did, and more than just the presidential. They were doing things in congressional elections, too. They were trying to undermine everything about our democracy. No future national security advisor has ever gotten on the phone and said, oh, don't worry, when we come into office, we'll make everything right. So, you know, he's broken new ground there. Maybe we can find a way to apply the Logan Act. I don't know. But it should be quite clear that he should be fired and be nowhere near the position he's in for any variety of reasons.
And there's also a meta story here, too, right? Which is that 9 intelligence officials are confirming this. You know,
yes.
That is theoretically secret information, right? That we're getting these leaks. I mean, clearly they're going after Flynn and I think, you know, obviously with reason, if these allegations are true. What's also interesting is that people have to remember, too, he made these calls I'm not sure exactly when he made these calls. I guess it would have been in January, early January.
December and then early January. Yeah.
But as of early January, all this information that may have been collected by the NSA, let's say, could be shared with the FBI, President Obama's administration, and Obama made that, opened up the door for that in a final act of, I'm not sure what you know, motivated that other than the fact that they enjoyed their spying as much as anybody, I guess. But, it's fascinating to watch this. It's also fascinating to watch like how Pence had been snared in this whole thing, where he was very aggressive about going out and defending him, like you said.
And which is sort of inevitable. I mean, that's the thing about Pence, which, you know, there definitely were scandals under him when he was governor. You know, there was the whole trying to create a sort of state propaganda organ in Indiana. That's sort of bothersome, right? There's the way he went after Planned Parenthood. There are a number. I'm not saying anything, you know, close to the fact that I think the man has a lot of integrity. But he wasn't on the level of sort of Trump and Flynn. And what the thing is that you can't be that close to them and not have them pull you in all of their dishonesty and all of their corruption. It's just inevitable. And so it's interesting because, you know, maybe so many people theorize that he just figured he'd go along for the ride. And if Trump won, you know, Trump's impeached or disappears within a couple of years because he's bored or he has to leave because he might get impeached. And then Pence, you know, is fine. Right. He inherits the presidency in one way or another. But, you know, how he thinks he's going to go for a couple of years and not be pulled into all of this garbage and not at least bear some responsibility for some of it is really sort of. It seems a bit naive to me.
I wonder if he's at home right now just saying, like, you know what I just realized? I'm the only one of these jackasses who's not getting paid by Rosneft.
Yeah, exactly, man. That's true.
I'm the only one who's not making any cash on this shit.
Yeah, he needs to get his – does he have a daughter? Maybe she should get a line out there, see if they can threaten Nordstrom's and get her stuff sold there.
Well, yeah, I mean –
which, by the way, we're not even talking about because there's too many other scandals that have happened since then.
Right. And, maybe he thinks it's just it's God's way of delivering him to the White House so that we end up with a full – wouldn't it be funny, folks – if we
yes.
thought we were getting an autocratic leader, and we got a theocratic one.
Exactly. It's sort of that would be an amazingly funny joke.
You got your theocracy in my autocracy.
No, you have your, yeah. Where is this left now? I mean, who knows, right? You've got this Jason Chaffetz in the house.
Wait a second. I think we do know where it leads us. And we'll get to Chaffetz but let's start with Nadler first. Because Jason Chaffetz, however he pronounces
it. How he pronounces that stupid name.
He, last night, and we have audio this. In fact, should we play some of this? Last night he had a town hall in Salt Lake City. There were 1,000 seats in the auditorium. They were filled, although I think there was like maybe 50 that were unfilled because people were just, for whatever reason, they were yelling to let people in from outside. Because outside there was at least another 1,000 people. And he was being asked, and look, there's a couple of things I want to make a point about this, and then we'll talk about it in terms of what the implications could be. One is, this is a what we call like a partisan index R25 seat. There's never going to be a non-Republican who takes this seat, I think. Nevertheless, there's value in this because Jason Chaffetz sits on an oversight committee that could realize, hey, it's in my best interest to start to examine the Trump administration. Now, maybe yep. Lip service, but who knows?
But many of these guys are lazy, and if I've always talked about this, people don't get the psychological aspect of politics. If you make their job harder, if you make them scared, and I don't mean scared physically because you're threatening them physically, scared because they're wimps to have to go and explain themselves at town hall meetings, then that, you know, even in a district like that. And the one thing I will add, and I'm not saying I have a lot of confidence that this would happen, whatever. No Democrat could win. There could be an interesting scenario for an Evan McMullen type Republican to run against someone like Chaffetz.
Right.
I don't, you know, and especially in a heavily Mormon state that didn't buy into Trump in the same way as certain other parts of the conservative coalition, like evangelicals, did. You know, you could see something there with McMullen. I'm not predicting it'll happen. I still think it's a long shot, but it's possible. So,
and it also creates a media narrative, right? Because you won't hear on the media too much about the fact that, you know, this is a heavily Republican district. But there's a couple of thousand people came out for a town hall, and Chaffetz doesn't like it. Here is a woman asking. And I don't know what her political, identification is. But here she is asking Chaffetz, like, where are you going to draw the line? Can we basically get, you know, broadly speaking, what it's going to take? Here it is.
I'm a retired teacher. I taught for 35 years in Salt Lake. And I rarely had a discipline problem because I laid out my expectations very clearly and I laid out the consequences. But once in a while at the beginning of the year, after just 2 or 3 weeks, I could look at the kid and think, you're going to be a problem. It's been 2 or 3 weeks.
I
and this is the consequence. For the President of the United States, the consequence is impeachment.
So he's being asked, what's your line in the sand? His answer was a little bit, step over, the line, more or less. I mean, let's listen to his response, okay? Because we already know there's a lot of, emoluments issues. But let's listen to what Chaffetz says.
I'll say quickly, I do like the comparison to a child.
Oh, yes. I think that was quite appropriate.
Thanks for being involved, and thanks for teaching. My kids all went through public school. What is the line? My line in the sand is the law. The president has to abide by the law, just like everybody else has to abide by the law. And let's also understand that that law, some of the things that I've heard in the accusations, don't step over the line of the law. Is the president required to disclose a tax return? He's not required to do that by law. Is he required by law? Is he exempt or not exempt from that? Come on, is he exempt or not exempt from conflicts of interest, which a lot of people have expressed concerns about? He's exempt from that. It is important. Impeachment is not high crimes and misdemeanors. It is also making sure that he abides by the law. And I cannot, it's not a Jason Chaffetz line. It's not a Mick Mulvaney. It's not, if you don't pick your person, it's the law. It's the law of the land. And if he has to rise to the law of high crimes and misdemeanors in order to get to that point.
Well, there it is. He's trying to explain that it's the law. And he says some of the accusations are not that he's broken the law. Well, I mean, we're three weeks in, and if you have some accusations that the laws have been broken, you should be busy right now.
Right, there's others, like kind of the fact that he's a complete and serious dick. Sure, so that's out there, and tweeting and this and that and the other thing, but there's at least a good half dozen accusations that he's broken the law, and others that obviously are quite clear, like the botched raid on Yemen that was everybody said don't do, and President Obama chose not to do, and then he chose to do it without really reading up on it, and then during the whole thing chose to be in bed tweeting instead of in the Situation Room. These are the kinds of things that if you spend 900 days on Benghazi, you might want to look into.
Just, right.
Maybe.
Right. Well, and then here's the other thing that's happening, and you drew my attention to this, in the House. Gerald Nadler is filing a resolution of inquiry. What does that mean?
What they're doing basically is they're demanding that the DOJ, now staffed with known civil rights supporter Jeff Sessions, provide all information to them on investigations into it's on both conflicts of interest when it comes to business and on Russia, because it can lead potentially to impeachment. And so it is often the first step in impeachment. So basically what they're doing is they're saying, give us all the documents on these two issues, because, there's a lot of things with Trump, but those are probably the two biggest ones.
And this is not, and they're not going to get it. I mean, this is one of those, this is basically another pressure point, because what happens is that a resolution of inquiry is referred to a specific committee. That committee has 14 legislative days to debate it and vote on whether or how it should be reported to the floor. If the committee ignores it once the letter of inquiry is referred over the course of the 14 days, then the measure can be called up on the House floor and voted upon. So these are sort of arcane parliamentary rules, and all it's going to do, I mean, it's not gonna pass, right? I mean, it's a Republican control.
Oh, it'd be almost impossible that it passes, yeah.
But what it's going to do is it's going to force Republicans to take a position on this. And at a time where you see Jason Chaffetz, you know, getting a lot of heat for just existing, essentially, without even having to make...
And he deserves for existing.
Right, but he's not even making an affirmative argument that they shouldn't look into these things. He's just making a sort of, he's just sort of trying to sidestep this train that seems to be... this is going to put more pressure.
And if people think this kind of stuff doesn't work... He recently felt compelled to sign a letter with Elijah Cummings calling for an investigation, or at least I'm trying to think, it was an inquiry. I don't remember the word used, into Kellyanne Conway doing her cheerleader routine for Ivanka's products on TV, which is illegal.
Right. And we should say that she, according to the White House, she's been consulted on this.
Yeah, it's nice. I mean, the thing is that, and this is where I think so much has changed, and in such a good way. And maybe we'll one day we'll all look back at Trump as being sort of the spark that lit the flame, which is that both the outside game and the inside game right now are doing a pretty good job. The outside game, I mean, you know, in terms of what the Women's March and other marches and protests at these town halls, everybody deserves an incredible amount of credit for not just sort of saying, all right, we're stuck with this. People are not accepting that, and they're out there, and they're making these points. So that is fantastic. But, you know, I will even give the Democrats who in the past, again, I've expressed so many times that it gets so frustrating when you feel like you're fighting with an arm or two arms tied behind your back against Republicans because they're willing to do so much. And I'm not talking about some of the sleaziest illegal things. I'm talking about even sort of just being a big pain in the ass, which is what McConnell was for 8 years, among others. And they finally seem to be getting it that A, you make their lives more difficult. They don't like their lives being difficult. Again, they're lazy. B, you get headlines from it. And negative headlines about Donald Trump again and again and again, yes, there will be that 25 to 35% that live in Rush Limbaugh Fox world that you can't convince that the sky's blue if it is. But there's a much bigger proportion of us, and they happen to be a majority in most states, that can send a Trump packing. And can also put enough pressure on the 43 Republican or the 43 House districts where Republican members, I'm sorry, where Donald Trump got less than 50% of the vote. Well, you know, if the bottom starts falling out, they're not as protected as the sort of other 180 or so that are gerrymandered so well that nothing could affect them. There are a good 40 to 50 Republicans who could find themselves in serious danger if his numbers go low enough. So This is all incredibly important. So it's like you finally, when you see this, when you see Nadler doing this, which is going to force the Republicans to defend this publicly, take this vote, suffer through that, or deal with the headlines and the rest. When you see them slowing down all of the votes on various members of various cabinet positions, this whole group of 90% of whom are completely unqualified for their jobs for various reasons. That's incredibly important, too, because while they've been doing all that, guess what they haven't been doing? Passing crappy legislation. And they've had to defend things, you know, like Tillerson's ties to Russia, like Betsy DeVos's not even understanding education, you know, like Price and his stock habit. And this is stuff that they have to defend and makes them look terrible. So, again, it's not just the battles you win, it's the battles you fight. And maybe they finally get that. You know, it has been nice to also see that a few Democrats who early on voted for members of the administration they should not have voted for.
Right.
And they heard it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Even staunch allies heard it. Elizabeth Warren heard it about voting for Ben Carson. Guess what? Maybe that helped inspire her to get up and do what she did. When it came to Sessions.
Definitely. I mean, people have to understand this, that regardless of what you imagine, what you want to project onto any of these people, Bernie, Elizabeth Warren, any of your heroes, I'm not saying that you should be completely cynical, but you should be a little bit skeptical. And understand, these people respond to pressure. And yes, I know that if there is ever a legislative question that pits moneyed interest against non-moneyed interest far more often than not. Far, far more often than not, the moneyed interest is going to win. But in these types of sort of super partisan situations where there isn't necessarily big moneyed interests that have lined up behind a Tom Price or a Ben Carson, at least on the left, even, like, right? I mean, just the across the spectrum. Now, we're just in a slightly different, not necessarily era, but in a, just a slightly different plane where we're talking about these things. There is no doubt in my mind that those people who voted for those first couple of nominees, if it had been 3 weeks later, they would have voted against them. They would have voted against Ben Carson because...
And even think about the Republicans in the House. Think about what they wanted to do with gutting the Ethics Committee. And there was such an uproar, they backed off. Think about what they were going to do with putting a bunch of the national parkland on the block to be sold. And that you can bet there were money and interest behind that. There's some guys out there who want to explore for natural gas.
And they'll get back to it. I mean,
of course,
make no mistake,
they're going to
try and come back to it. And also look at the immigration ban, right? I mean, the courts rejected the idea that President Trump's counsel lawyer could amend an executive order. You can't,
right?
You know, they call it an executive order. It is the president. If you really want to amend this, have the president sign another executive order. You can't just give it to a lawyer or to somebody in some office somewhere who says, like, hey, he actually means this. Yeah, disregard that part. He means this.
And here's the other thing about that. You brought up very importantly, don't think that you can't influence even Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders, whoever. Don't think that judges don't read newspapers and watch TV, too. I'm just saying... If anybody who wants to believe, I mean, look, and I think I'm trying to remember if it was the gay rights case that established marriage. But Anthony Kennedy admitted, even in writing that I believe it was that one, that looking at national and comparing to international standards of behavior as a way. I mean, I don't ever think that in some of these cases they're not looking at some of that stuff.
Of course. I mean, that's, you know, judges are human beings. And if they get a sense that they're going to be the most lonely person in the country because they decide against a specific thing, that weighs on their decision-making process, whether they're conscious of it or not. All right, let's go. We don't have too much more time, so I want to go from that to Price and Gorsuch. Obviously, Sessions was confirmed. And only your buddy Joe Manchin voted for Sessions, gave him a thumbs up. I mean, clearly Sessions is the worst. I mean, in terms of the sensitivity of that position.
The sensitivity, and I've said this in the past, and I'm not claiming to be an expert on this, but just from common sense and looking at various positions, it seems to me the most dangerous positions to have somebody terrible in are the Secretary of State and the Attorney General, because they have some level of independence. The Attorney General is supposed to be independent by nature, and the Secretary of State's flying around the world without the president there some of the time, which means, you know, when the cat's away. I mean, one could argue defense, too, because you have an argument in that room for war or peace. But I'm just saying, you know, those are important positions. And so the Sessions thing, I'm not going to lie, I mean, that's a huge blow, and people are going to have to, you know, and not that I didn't know what happened, but people are going to have to monitor that situation, because I don't trust that guy as far as I could kick him, and I'd like to kick him pretty far.
Yeah, no, I mean, he is about as bad of a pick as one could imagine for the Attorney General, and particularly in this post Voting Rights Act gutting era, because when the Voting Rights Act gutting was, before that took place, the preclearance was automatic. Things would have to go to the Department of Justice, and you could sue the Department of Justice if they were too lenient in providing preclearance for these things, and you still had a structure in place to deal with this stuff if you ever got this guy out of office. I mean, Sessions is very bad in terms of immigration, very bad in terms of voting rights, And I imagine he's going to be very bad in a whole host of other areas. And when you have those two areas that are so ideologically important to you as the Attorney General, many of the people that you're supposedly also supposed to be going after and doing enforcement actions and police actions are major corporations that have the ability to sort of fund and support things that you're doing. So it's very, very problematic. But Tom Price was confirmed last night at 2 a.m. He was confirmed by exclusively by Republicans. Everyone in the Democratic caucus voted against him, short of McCaskill, who was visiting her husband, who was in the hospital after surgery. And this is where this is going to be one of those places where the rubber meets the road, because Tom Price has been brought in theoretically to cut Obamacare, and frankly, probably to cut Medicare.
And Medicaid, yeah.
And Medicaid. And the question is that going to happen? I mean, Tom Price is Paul Ryan's guy. And
right.
This is where we're going to start to see, like, major, major policy. We're going to be playing on a field of major, major policy issues.
And just for fun, not that I think this will change at all, although predicting anything is tough. You know, he belongs to some cultish group of people that don't think that we should be giving our kids their shots. So just know that.
No, he's also vaguely associated with them. Yeah, I mean, I mean, who knows? But I think the thing that's going to get people's attention, I think, is going to be.
No, that's the thing one of the things that should have stopped him from being there, among many things. You're right. I don't say that's not going to be a policy issue, but it's Medicare, Medicaid, and Obamacare are kind of the biggies. He'll also, of course, be a lead, I'm sure, in the assault on Planned Parenthood to try to disqualify Medicaid dollars from being used for those who need Planned Parenthood for non-abortion services. So, you know, he's going to play a role in all of that. And again, he is as terrible an individual as one could dream up for that position, just in the same way. I don't think that position has the independence of the AG, so I don't view it as quite as bad, but he's every bit as bad of a person, quite clearly.
And we should also say, like, we've said nothing about the fact that, you know, for all intents and purposes, this guy's pretty corrupt. I mean, the idea that we're supposed to believe his financial advisor just bought stocks just willy-nilly, and then he just happened to pass legislation or promote legislation that would specifically
through
help.
Osmosis. I can't believe you don't trust it, Sam, that somehow his financial advisor knew, you know, like, he could predict the future. You know, he could see a week in advance that Price was going to support positions and push legislation that would help that very company that he had bought stock in. It was really sort of an amazing thing.
I want to know who that financial advisor is, because this person's a genius.
Let's take this guy to Vegas, like a la Rain Man.
Oh my God, that actually is a good idea. Cliffy, as always, a pleasure, bud. And don't forget to go and support Cliff's podcast. When are you going to launch this baby? You're going to wait until you get the full...
We may go beforehand. I had a couple big work projects, and I've been clearing them out of the way so I can devote the time that should be devoted to launching this. So, yeah, I think we'll start ahead of time. But folks, you know, go to GoFundMe, Cliff Schechter, you plug my name in there, you'll find it. And after last week's show, we went up a couple $1,000. We're at about $11,500
now.
So, you know, this show is rocking it, quite frankly.
Good. All right. Well, we'll put a link, obviously, and people can just, if you Google GoFundMe, Cliff Schechter, unprecedented podcast, it'll pop up. Cliff, thanks so much for the time today, buddy. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks, as always, for having me on.
All right.
Take care, man. And folks.
Beep, beep. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. Bring in Matthew Film Guy. Just a warning in advance. Today, we're not going to go 3 or 4 hours. I can't do it. I'm sick. I woke up in the middle of the night with a huge coughing attack. I feel like I'm constantly on the verge of coughing. Do I get sick a lot, Matt? Kelly said I get sick a lot. I don't really do it.
I don't know. This time I thought maybe it might be evidence that you do get sick a lot, but I can't tell if that's just because Kelly's been saying you get sick a lot lately.
I've been sick, what, maybe twice this year? It's the second time.
But also, I think it's because you have kids, so you come in and say, oh, Saul's sick, or,
yeah,
you know, so people...
I'm surrounded by sickness.
So you're sort of associated with sickness.
I have an aura of sickness. That I'll accept. I will accept that I have an aura of sickness. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Matthew, film guy. Oh, we're going to play... We'll let the Matthew film guy hear the Jimmy Reefer cake, so we'll play it when we get back. I'll be right back, folks. We are back, ladies and gentlemen. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, we will play the Jimmy Reefer Cake Song of the Week in just a moment. But let's play, I think this is our only theme song that is not penned and performed and or performed by Jimmy Reefer Cake, because this one is the Matthew Film Guy theme song. Yes, Matthew, film guy.
Hello, Sam.
Hello, Matthew. Should we...
Great to be here.
It is so great to have you. Should we first just listen to the Jimmy Reefer Cake song?
What?
Yes. Yeah, it's a rare treat for you. Here you go.
Ow.
This is called Herbs Are Better Than Words.
I think it's herbs.
Yeah.
Herbs.
1, 2, 3, 4. I went to my local Democratic Party meeting, and I lectured them on why I think Hillary lost. They called me a misogynist pig and told me to go away. I told them I thought Hillary would be a shitty president anyway. I gotta infiltrate the party and get them all high, yeah. And maybe herbs work better than words. Yeah, maybe herbs work better than words. We'll find out. They called me a stoner and a Bernie bro. To their meetings I may never again go. Yet long ago I executed a similar plan to change the hearts and minds of man. Yes, I did. I remember way back in the day I successfully infiltrated the KKK. I got them all stoned every single day. Yeah, infiltrate the KKK and get them all high. Maybe, just maybe, herbs work better than words. Maybe. A deep cover A deep cover KKK operation. Pretty scary, huh, man? I had to persevere to make it a success in the end. I managed to convert some of them into libertarians. Oh, yeah, maybe. Herbs work better than words.
Oh, there you have it. There's Jimmy Ray VK. Can I just say one thing that I think converting KKK members to libertarians, probably not too difficult.
Sideways step.
Maybe not even that far of a sideways step. I think that's sort of like,
oh no, I reckon I'm not personally racist anymore, but I have a thought experiment which would re-legalize slavery.
I think it's more like, well, yeah, no, I've always been libertarian in my orientation in terms of economics. I just have not been fully sold on the non-aggression principle. But largely speaking, yes, I've always considered myself a libertarian. I mean, that's not really a conversion as much as that is just like a deeper exploration as to who these people are. And I would also say, just to overly critique the song, Matthew, and then I'll give you your opportunity, if you're going into a meeting to try and convince people, the first thing that you do, picking a fight and telling them that they're all wrong, probably not going to, I don't know.
It's not what Cicero would advise in his rhetoric.
That is not getting inside
what
the circle.
What you do is you go into the place and you're smoking the weed and you say that everyone is a stupid and the woman that they love is a bitch who would have been a terrible presidente. Cicero 2.0.
There you go. Matthew.
Pothead Cicero.
So you, I know that wasn't a film, but it was.
What's your critique?
I love Jimmy Reefer Cake because it gives us all a chance to filter the day's news and issues through the views of like a 19-year-old who just smoked pot for the first time in his dorm room.
Wow, Matthew. I don't think
I
Jimmy's
mean, I always
19.
Wonder, like, what would I have thought about this news or event after I had smoked pot for the first time, which granted was a mind opener at the time.
But
and I get a little ditty with it too. He's, you know, three chords in the truth.
Did you ever think about trying to infiltrate the KKK when you first smoked pot?
But surely.
Probably.
Surely, Matthew, you're not suggesting that this is the first time Jimmy Reefer Cake is smoking pot.
No, but it's like somehow he like was so blown away by it at that time, whether it's 10 or 20 years ago, that he just decided, I'm done evolving. This is where I'm at. This is how I see the world, and it cannot get any better than this. Which, you know, for some people, that works.
Well, I'll tell you something. I think there's very little chance of Jimmy Reefer Cake buying any of your tchotchkes on eBay now.
He invited me on his show. I'm willing to go on and have this debate with him. I mean, look, it's kind of a hard thing for me to argue. I am a cannabis aficionado, but I don't filter every single thing that I ever thought possible through its lens. It's got its place, but it's, you know, it can be a regressive form of insight after a while, I think.
You're
but
more
anyway,
like
hey.
Matthew Reefer Cupcake as opposed to the full-on cake, right?
Actually, lately I've been Matthew Cannabis Oil Pen, which is an amazing innovation that's
Wait,
come
what?
To the world.
Good
What is that?
Move.
What is that, an oil pen?
I've been starting to be shown these little cartridges that are obviously manufactured somewhere in a state where it's legal, and you buy like a USB charging little device.
Oh, so vaping, like, vaping, you're vaping.
Well, no, because it's not, you don't put the vegetable matter in it. There's someone is somewhere in a factory making these little oil cartridges that screw on. So you buy the oil cartridge.
Okay.
Listen, we can talk about this off air.
It's a totally different thing. God damn it.
Now, so I don't understand. So when you buy the dime bag of these things, doesn't it leak?
Yeah, well, okay, Sam, I see where you're going wrong here. You actually, it doesn't come in a bag anymore. It's like it's industrialized marijuana manufacturing. This is the world we live in now. This is what I'm trying to tell you.
Like ink refills.
So I guess it is. I guess it is. You know, technically it's not vapor. It's, you know, atomizing or whatever.
You're so old, you can't even keep up with your hobbies. Sad. Yeah.
Exactly. Sam. Don't worry. I'll turn you on to it.
Okay. All right. Good. We will talk off air.
Sure.
Now, Matthew, what else have you been up to besides atomizing marijuana tincture?
I mean, you know, I've been doing just my normal thing as a, you know, a marginal film world figure, self-investigating, self-care, enjoying the benefits of this capitalist society to the extent that I have any of them, enjoying the pleasures and the challenges of a committed, intimate relationship with Mary, raising a cute brown dog. I don't know, Sam. I'm doing my best to keep my head on straight.
Wow.
I'm teaching a lot these days, so I have that as an outlet, you know.
So now, when you say you're teaching a lot, does that mean you've doubled up on the JCC film classes for elderly
people? Yeah, well, I have the JCC film class, and I have the Sacred Heart University graduate film editing class.
Wow, okay. All right.
So, which is a great way for me to reconnect with, like, why I got involved into this whole world in the first place.
Which
really,
was
you know,
for Catholic religious reasons.
Yeah, and girls.
At Sacred Heart.
No, that's not true. That's not true. But it's a struggle. I am doing a lot of, like, vegging out and watching movies, maybe related to the topic we were speaking on earlier. But I'm also doing a lot of, like, reading, and I'm trying to read, but I keep going back and forth between completely, you know, escapist, you know, sci-fi novels and making lists of, like, really serious stuff. Like, I'm reading the collected essays of James Baldwin, which has been interesting, but, you know, it's like I can only do that for so long, and then I hop back off. I don't know. I've been seeing good movies, and I've been seeing, like, the Resident Evil movies, so it's been a weird time for me. I mean, I'm still coping with this new kind of cultural paradigm that we seem to be in right now, but
I think everybody is. I think everybody's trying to find some, at least. I feel like everybody's trying to find some equilibrium, and then
exactly.
And then from there, you know, start to actually do something.
That's right. Mary and I have been watching a lot of Seinfeld. That's been like an interesting balm on my soul. No, it's been good.
Can't make jokes anymore.
Well,
everyone's worried
this is the
about
early Seinfeld.
Steve Bannon.
This is the early Seinfeld, where it was still sort of a lot less racially charged, I guess.
Who's concerned about fascism encroaching on the country when you can't make a gay king joke at a college?
Yes, Michael, I know. That's your bete noir with Seinfeld. I agree with that. He's out of line.
Ooh.
I agree.
Swinging today.
Someone's got some
sharp
elbows.
No, but I'm just saying, because I'm trying to tell you, Seinfeld, watching Seinfeld with Mary, and she's also watching a lot of Mary Tyler Moore show, but watching that, it's been great. It's really been
I'm glad you brought that up, because the Mary Tyler Moore thing, because, you know, somehow I got thinking about this, and I wasn't even planning on talking to you about this, but I was thinking about this today.
This is totally impromptu?
It's totally impromptu.
Okay.
I was somehow, I don't know how I got to thinking about it, but it was like 4 a.m. when I woke up with a coughing fit. And then I was thinking, like, Mary Tyler Moore died. And then I was thinking about, this is a completely random thought, but the implications of our ability today, as opposed to when I was even Matt's age, I think, you know, I think Matt's age, we had VHSs. So, but prior to that, right, you didn't really have access in any meaningful way, and certainly not a convenient way, to the entire library, more or less, of film and television that has been created, okay, when today that we do. So so let me ask you this. Has the purpose for being an artist, like somehow I started thinking about this and started thinking like, the value that I've always seen, you know, I don't know how I got onto this, but the value of, like, people providing escapism, right? Like, you know, if I'm an artist right now doing film or TV, I think I was getting annoyed by something about a filmmaker. I can't remember what it was. But there's a quality about filmmakers that I've found where sometimes they feel like what they're doing is the end-all be-all. And maybe I notice it just like when you're going down the street some days and you get annoyed because there's movie productions there and they're all acting like they're, you know, they have this sense that they're on some type of mission, right? That they're fighting a war and you're all just civilians and hopefully you don't get hurt, but we've got to do this movie. It's the most important thing in the world. And then I thought, like, oh, well, you know, there's a value to that because people need escapism now and they need to learn about the human condition and they need to find things that are more eternal. And then I thought, but wait a second, you know what? There's enough. Like, we have enough of a library out there where nobody needs to make any more. And that's all suited. They're really, anybody who's making that stuff going forward is really just making it for themselves. Because in terms of, like, consumers and viewers, I could spend the rest of my life easily, and even young Matt could spend the rest of his life easily going back through every television program ever made, and probably the quality would be just as good, and the depth and the understanding of the human nature or the escapism. I mean, it's all there. We don't need anybody to make any more of this shit, as far as I'm concerned.
Sam, I can't say that I disagree with what you're saying, but let me. Are you finished? Let me just respond quickly because
I need a nap is what I need. I mean, I was up at 4 in the morning thinking about this, but go ahead.
I actually have thought along similar lines. You know, recently
little pen with the liquid, the oil.
It may or may not have. Let's not get into that. But okay. I'll tell you that I think it was Scorsese, somebody big like that said that they thought that cinema was dead. And actually my first thought was, whew, good, now I can finally catch up.
Right.
Because there is so much out there that, like, you know, I've had my mind blown by movies made in the 30s, you know, that I just didn't know were out there. But it spoke to me in my life in its present situation. And, yeah, there is a lot out there. I mean, but when you think that way, just to push back a little bit, is that artists give you gifts that you didn't know you needed. So you and I can look at the entire canon of all the great works of art, including literature and everything else, and say, oh, it's got to be it, right? That's got to be it. But you don't know until something new, or as you like to say, sui generis, comes out that you didn't expect. So if there's posers who just want to be rich and famous,
but it exists.
It gets us one of those, huh?
It already exists, buddy. You just haven't found it. You just got to keep going through Netflix.
Maybe. It's speculative. You don't know. Maybe, you know, you don't know who's going to bring on the new thing that you didn't expect to see or something.
All right.
You know, I guess it's up to the people who've seen it all to go, yep, that's new or not. But,
well, if there's a thousand, if it's one in a thousand, I still think net, better to just wrap all that shit up.
Maybe. You know what's
I guess I was
though?
Thinking in terms of, like, what is the responsibility of artists in this era to really to politicize what they're doing? That's really where I was getting to. Because, you know, I've been thinking a lot about the Patriots. I've been struggling with the fact that Belichick and Brady were publicly supportive of Donald Trump. And I've been buoyed by the fact that at least four or five guys on the Patriots now are refusing to go to the White House, including what's-his-face's son, the CBS commentator, the former, he was an NFL guy, and Martellus Bennett now, Marty Bennett is like one of my favorite follows on Twitter, and I'm getting into his kids' books that he's writing, and I'm just thinking, like, this is like, you know, people should be politicizing themselves. And you're not doing anything that's political with your filmmaking and whatnot, then screw you.
You know, there is a thought to be had about film and art when it's really art and not just entertainment to keep you numb for 2 hours, which has its point. It's I forget who the writer was who said it's the news that stays news. It's not necessarily topical, but it's things about human nature that will always be relevant.
Yeah, but my
point
is, that shit, we already got all that. Like, that's my point. This is supposed to be stuff that's timeless. It gets to stuff that is not of the day and is about human emotion, which is eternal. Well, you know what? We got 100-some-odd years of this already stored up. And if it's eternal, just about everybody who had something to say about it has said just about everything that needs to be said. And it's just a matter of us going out and finding it, not waiting until, you know, it comes out and gets nominated for a Golden Globe or whatever the fuck it is.
You know, maybe, Sam, but, you know, maybe it just hasn't been updated into 1080p HD or 4K. So we need it that way in order to receive it.
All right.
You know
well,
I'm
I
saying?
Mean, if you're saying we need people to keep doing stuff so that we can use it on our projected screens and our big TVs. All right.
Yeah, I'm just
fair enough.
It just has to be technically updated. That's right. Just up-res it. No, but I'm, you know, as a metaphor to say, like, it needs to be retold for a modern audience in some way sometimes. Maybe. I tend to really agree with you. Honestly, I do. Especially the more I look into films and I realize even with all the voracious film viewing I do, there's still plenty of geniuses I have not even tapped. So it always feels like the world of film that's come before is bigger than I could ever possibly take in one life. But listen, I want to tell you here, I want to talk about the whole tapes thing too, but the film I want to recommend this week is written by a filmmaker who I follow on Facebook, and he's actually making a movie right now, and he wrote this. I want to read this to you. He said, "I'm caught between powerful emotions. On one hand, I am midway through directing a film which filled me with confidence, a film I think is the strongest I've done. On the other hand, I'm witnessing a national crisis, I believe even greater than the Civil War, the dismantling of the great American experiment in tolerance and personal liberty. Which means more to me, creative expression or patriotism? Would I be willing to reverse these priorities if I could?" And he's just, you know, asking that into the ether. But I think that bodes well. That's a good sign, don't you think?
I don't know. I'll wait and see what kind of movie he makes.
No, I don't know what he'll do yet.
Is it a comedy?
I don't think so. No. Mm. When I tell you who it is and what it is, you'll understand. But
all right, we'll circle back to that. What's the tape?
Let's circle back to that. But let me tell you, one of the other things that I've been doing with some of the downtime I have here, because I haven't been doing too much corporate work in the new year, in between the teaching, I'm getting to work on one of my own. Huh?
Fighting the power.
Yeah, fighting the power. Yeah, yeah. I serve the power, and then I fight the power. And then I serve the power, and then I fight the power. But one of these, I think you may realize this, I've been, for the last 10 or 15 years, been trying to slowly cobble together a film made up of all of the home movies, home video, audio recordings, and various things that my family has taken since before I was even born. My grandfather was one of the first, you know, home movie enthusiasts. So I take slowly, I go through this footage, and sometimes I think I need to grow emotionally before I'm ready to actually do anything with it. But there's a lot of interesting stuff in there. And what did I come across while I was capturing some of the audio tapes that my grandmother took an audio travel log of her trip to the Orient. It's like 25 tapes of her talking to her tape recorder.
Wow.
But meanwhile, I'm combing through all these tapes, and I come across a tape that says Schimmel on it. And I put it into my audio cassette recorder, and I hear you, I believe it's you and Conan O'Brien and some other Hollywood liberal elite know-nothings.
Tom and Don.
Talking about, I guess, your Beat Cops project. Is this something you remember?
You know, you sent it to me. I listened to it for 10 seconds. And as far as I can tell, it was, well, this was on a stage. I think you remember the stage. I was recording everything in my life.
Right.
I was recording.
Which I respect.
Yeah. No, I think I had read that Lenny Bruce did that. So I had developed. Well, I guess that stage was about 6 or 7 years long, but I was recording all my phone calls, certainly, because I was getting calls from...
Is that legal?
Nigerian... No. Because I was getting calls from Nigerian scam artists, and I was playing characters with them, and so I was recording those. But I think I would hit the tape recorder when I would have any calls at that point, and I think what must have happened is we had a note session with Fox. I did this show, Beat Cops. We did one version for Studios USA where I was the director and the EP and did the whole production. And then Conoco bought it and to redevelop it with Fox. We brought on two other showrunner writer types. Conan was the EP and I was an EP, and I think those guys were EPs. And we were all talking about the note session that we had had before. And I don't know the details other than I think we were trying to decipher, like, what were they talking about? I think the first thing I heard was, like, they said something like, can we make this into a multi-camera show?
Yeah, to me, this if I didn't know this was real, I would think that this was a scene out of Who's the Caboose.
Yeah.
Because it was so, I mean, Conan actually comes off well. He's kind of like self-deprecating and ironic, and I think at some point he even says like, okay, now what I need to do is get off this call and go sell you guys out to the studio and then come back to you and tell you my hands were tied. So he's like making self-referential jokes, but at some point someone actually says, it's a fish out of water story, and they're asking us to put the fish back in the water. You don't put the fish back in the water.
That's right. That's right. There's no doubt.
I swear you couldn't write that as a... Oh, man.
I can't tell how... I can't tell how jaded I am in that moment.
Well, you're pretty on, it sounds like to me. Like you want this to happen, so okay. You're not like, you know.
Okay,
you're not totally self-destructive. I think that mode came later.
Yeah, that may have been like when I started taking Lexapro. I can't remember if I was I need to listen to it more. I mean, I came across a tape like that, cuz I have a bunch of those tapes too that I've got to digitize. And I never labeled, and some of them are like Nigerian calls. And there was one where I can't tell, like a girl, I couldn't tell if I had gone on a date with her, but I was clearly trying to avoid, going on another date with her. And I didn't seem to know her, but she seemed to know me. And it was a weird situation. And I've listened to the tape like twice. I still can't quite figure it out. All I know is I kept saying like, oh yeah, no, I would do that, but I've got to write and I've got to have downtime
I just need to collect myself.
Yeah, exactly. There was
and
a lot of
I
that.
And then I got to go listen
and then, wait,
to my
was there
tapes.
Something else on that audio tape you said?
Yeah, it was you and Robert Schimmel doing the, I think like what supposedly was, this is probably why I have the tape, because it was supposedly audio captured for him to leave a voice message in a scene in Bad Situationist.
Ah, okay.
And it's, I guess the other side is this tape, so.
And we cast Robert Schimmel. I mean, I don't know if people know who Robert Schimmel is, but he was a very funny comedian. Who, not as great of an actor. He was on Howard Stern quite a bit.
Right.
Had the worst luck of any human being. Just a very screwed up, neurotic life.
To the very end, too.
To the very end. We booked him, like, I sort of cast him in the thing, and then I sort of auditioned him. He worked with my manager, and I was like, God, I don't think this is going to work with him. He's just not the actor, you know, I need. And then he called me and he said, Sam, I just want you to know I've been diagnosed. My cancer has come back. This is probably going to be the last thing I ever do. And I can't tell you how excited I am for this project. It's going to live on. And I was just like, well, if this movie can't sustain having that guy on there, then the movie's not worth doing. So we just kept him in. And he was okay. Wasn't great. But the movie had a lot of other problems, obviously, afterwards. And then his cancer went into remission. He was alive. And he's driving with his daughter. And his daughter gets into an accident and he dies.
Unbelievable.
Just
unbelievable.
A horrible, like, and he had already lost, like, his mom or something. I can't remember.
His son,
right. I mean, just horrible luck.
Yeah.
Very sweet guy. Very sweet guy.
Yeah. Potty mouth, loves to go blue.
Yep.
Sweet guy.
Wow, that was crazy.
Well, investigate his album, right, folks. They're funny.
So, all right. With that little tangent, what is the movie of the week?
All right. So the filmmaker who I was reading his Facebook post was none other than Paul Schrader,
who you may know as
a screenwriter, but he's also directed a lot of great movies over the years.
Oh, old timey.
Yeah.
What did he do? Did he do Bonnie and Clyde?
No, he did Blue Collar. He did Mishima. He did Cat People. He did a lot
Cat
of
People, right?
You know, I would there. You know, they were Hollywood movies, but they were sort of on the sort of outskirts.
But he had another movie that was even more famous, didn't he? No, all right,
well
go.
he was
Taxi Driver. Taxi Driver. He wrote Taxi Driver.
And that is the movie that I want to talk about today. I know it's a movie that a lot of people have seen. I know it's a movie that everyone knows. It's on every dorm room wall poster, but I think it deserves to be reinvestigated in this current environment, because I keep thinking about Travis Bickle in this new environment. And it's sort of like we have the Travis Bickle presidency right now.
Oh,
and if you remember, he is a violent racist who is thinking about assassinating a senator, right? I mean, we remember this movie for kind of the cool side of it, and people sort of don't realize that it's kind of critical of this stance, you know? But right now, it's sort of like everyone's giving in to their inner Travis Bickle. You know, he's a racist. He beats the crap out of and kills a black guy and calling him every name in the book. And it's the movie is, I think, prescient because it shows that, if you recall, at the end of the movie, he erupts into this horrible scene of violence, and he is considered the hero for it. You know, and at the time, you're kind of like with him. And at least for me, at that moment, what makes this movie so great is that you actually ask yourself, "Oh my God, I've been like on this guy's side. I've been identifying with this wacko, and even cheering him on as he kind of gets revenge on these
also
pimps and,
creepy, yeah. creepy sexual thing with underage women."
Exactly, and he treats women like either Madonnas or whores. Right,
right?
He takes his girlfriend played. By from Moonlighting, you know, Cybill Shepherd, to a porno movie on their date, and he's like, "What? Don't why? This is wrong." Like he doesn't understand.
What's
and meanwhile, he's obsessed with saving this prostitute. So it has all of the issues I think driving this sort of, you know, we talk about the 33% of Americans who are always going to be this sort of way. I think this movie captures what happens inside the minds of this person, but I think the 33% represents people who let that drive them. But I think we all have that in us, you know, and I think it's important to kind of come to terms with how we can identify with a guy like that, because I think it results in somebody like Donald Trump getting elected.
Oh,
so this is a movie I think people should revisit. If you've seen it a million times, see it a million and one, and just think that way. Think about, you know, how Travis Bickle is a part of all of us.
Matthew Film Guy, words to live by. Travis Bickle is a part of all of us.
Are you talking to me?
Not if you smoke enough weed.
I see what you did.
Sorry. Yeah.
Very well done. Very there well done. And Michael didn't even pick up on that. You were so smooth.
That's all right. That's all right. It's for you.
Matthew Film Guy, always a pleasure. I'll allow you plug one tchotchke that you have on eBay. Which one is it?
Oh, that's really kind of you. I just found in my landlord's basement a ceramic clown bathroom toilet brush holder, which I think is fantastic.
Wow.
So now, what is
your landlord? What do you do? Do you go to your landlord and you say, "Let me sell this for you. We'll split the profits"?
Yeah, he's just like, it's crap. It's crap that his degenerate nephew who used to live in the basement, that's another whole long story, just left there. And, you know, I pay a little extra to have some storage space down there. And I'm cleaning out, and he's like, "If you can clean it out, you can use it." So I'm cleaning out the area, and I find this thing. And he was putting it in the garbage. I'm like, "That's not garbage. That's prime eBay material, my friend."
What is the bidding up to on that?
It just went up, so no bids yet. But I started it at a reasonable $19.99. And you can feel free to contact me if you think you can beat that.
There you go, folks. All right,
vintage clown toilet brush holder.
Right,
Alice.
I would imagine
we're gonna make a killing on eBay.
I would imagine they're all vintage. The clown toilet brushes, probably not still producing those.
I'll say it again,
not in the original ceramic.
Travis Bickle explains it all. Now open up the eBay bidding.
See you later.
Take care, guys.
All right. All right. All right, we're going to go to a fun half for just about a half hour. So I'm going to.
Actually, that was a very solid take on Taxi Driver. I buy
it. Oh, yeah.
Very smart.
It's always a pleasure having Matthew Film Guy on.
No, it's always a pleasure.
And if
we
can
keep
the eBay tchotchkes talk to just that, if we can sort of, you know, sequester it, keep it from infecting the rest of the segment.
So in other words, I decide what gets in the segments because I'm the host of the segment. So I'm hosting. She could be hosting.
What are you talking about?
You don't remember. Aliens.
In aliens?
You get control. You control what is in and out of the segment.
Oh, yeah. Okay. You're talking about the Trump. Oh, that's, yeah. The other day, I don't know if he listens to the show. I doubt he does. But we were watching the segment where Trump was pretending that he could read the executive order. He was explaining the executive order that was written. And we were like, oh, God. We hope Seferovitz. Can you pronounce his name for me, please?
Peter Serafinowicz.
Serafinowicz, right.
Serafinowicz.
And he's a very funny guy. And there was something else he had done a long time ago that I also thought was really funny. I can't remember. And his Twitter, he doesn't seem to be as active on Twitter. Maybe I just don't see it. Maybe he's tweeting at a different time.
He used to be more active. He used to do Q&As, but yeah, I haven't seen him lately.
All right, so Peter Serafinowicz. And what else did he do? There was something else he did that was a big project. Like, I can't remember.
He used to do this, I forget what it's like called, but it was a documentary, a mock documentary show in the 90s. I might Google
it. Oh, my God.
It.
Don't tell me it was the 90s. God, I'm getting old. Anyways, so...
he was in that rap rapping. Michael, you remember this skit, right?
Are you serious?
He's the host in that rap 2000.
Oh,
skit.
That guy's amazingly funny.
Very funny.
Wow.
And I hope he doesn't mind that we play these clips on the show and then cut them up and put them on YouTube. But
then
the more people
from it, you see.
But the more people that we can get to watch these, I think we're doing a public service. Frankly.
It's some of the most important comedy of this time.
Because look, it's obviously less about you're not it just makes it easier for you to deal with Trump. It's not one of those things necessarily that I think it's going to shake the undergirdings of Trump, but it makes it easier for me to deal with Trump. And I just introduced it to Myla, and she now, my 11-year-old daughter, I think like is going to be able to make it through the next 3 or 4 years because of this. But so we were watching the clip from Trump when he was reading the executive order to police officers and ostensibly explaining what it means, but all he was doing was repeating the words. So he would read it and he would then repeat the words as if it was by repeating the words, he's explaining it. And so, but he did end up doing Sassy Trump. So here is Sassy Trump. What is the title of this? Sassy Trump Aliens?
So just listen. Here's what it says. This is what they're arguing. Whenever the president finds that the entry of any aliens, okay, the entry of any aliens or of any class of aliens. So any aliens, any class of aliens into the United States. So the entry of people into the United States, let's say just to be precise, if aliens into the United States. So anytime, whenever the president finds the entry of any alien or any class of aliens into the United States would be detrimental to the interests of the United States, right?
All right, you have to go see the whole thing so that he gets the hits on this that he deserves and pass these things around to people. I mean, I really honestly think that, like, you really have two choices. I think it's either some type of sedative or alcohol or something like this to get through the next 4 years.
All of the above.
The mockumentary series he did was in 2002. It's called Look Around You, and that's what that Rap 2000 sketch was from.
Yeah.
I'm rapping. I'm rapping. So good, man.
Very funny stuff. We're going to try and get him on. I'm going to try and get him on. We got to get him on Friday. All right. Folks, just a reminder, it is your membership that make this show possible. I want to thank our members. I want to thank our chatters in our YouTube chat because they're in there during the live show making it very, very dynamic and maybe uncomfortable for some people. I don't know. But I want to thank them. And I want to thank you listeners for listening on a regular basis too. It's we have a lot of people who are listening I think we have a lot of new listeners, and we have a lot of people who are listening more than they used to. And we appreciate it. Makes it, you know, makes it feel like when we come in that we're doing something that is important for us to do. And thank you very much. Again, if you want to become a member, support the program, join themajorityreport.com. You can also justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code majority, get 10% off. Also, you can buy it through our Amazon link or our jet.com link at majorityreportkickback.com. And going to take a quick break, head into the fun half. 646-257-3920 is the number. You can IM me through the app, which you can pick up at majorityapp.com.